the Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creators of the Bionic Studio, the smarter way to make radio.
Hello, welcome to the Radio Today programme. Thanks for following us. Now let's get straight into it. Former Virgin Radio and talk radio presenter Jamie East is your guest host this time round. Jamie is known for setting up the Holy Moly website and doing lots of stuff on the telly. He now hosts his own podcast called The Smart 7 with Liam Thompson. Comes out every morning at 7. It's quite good actually, you might want to check it out. This week, he's chatting to Scott Mills, who we all know as the big radio personality from Overnights on Power FM. Oh, and he's also doing afternoons on Radio 1 at the moment as well. So, without further ado, let's see what they had to say to each other.
Original music for this podcast was composed by Mikasa.
This is exciting. This is for the Radio Today podcast. I am Jamie East, sometimes appear on the radio and podcaster and all-round gob on a stick. And I'm delighted to welcome to this kind of guest podcast series that I think they're doing, a radio legend who I'm sure everybody will be kind of really interested to hear what your thoughts are about stuff and where your head's at and just what's going on in the life of Scott Mills. How are you, sir?
Good, Jamie. How are you?
Really good. Look at us doing sync claps. And,
I know.
We were just saying, we just press record quickly because I just realised that you were the last person I saw in London before. I think the next morning I woke up and I thought something doesn't feel right, and that was it. And I've not been back in Central London.
Was it the next day?
Literally the next morning. Yeah, we both took a photo next to a cardboard cutout of Rylan.
Yes, we
in
did.
A cafe just off Great Portland Street.
Yeah, the little the Scandinavian cafe.
The Scandinavian thing, that was it, yeah.
I mean, great. In a way, I feel like touched that was the last time you saw civilization.
You were my last, Scott. Yeah.
I feel quite lucky, actually, that I've been able to go to work every day and actually still working through all this. So, I do a show on Saturday on 5 Live. For a while, that was recorded from our houses. Yeah. The thing is with the BBC building, for a while, because it was all new and no one knew anything about it, it's like, how do you make a building like that COVID secure? So it kind of wasn't for a while. Like, we were just keeping our distance and doing, you know, what the rules were or what people said to do.
Hand space. That was all we had to do.
Yeah, that's all we knew.
Yeah.
And this is way before, like, if you, next time you go into an office, or anyone listening, you know, they have to do it now. There are like literally one-way signs everywhere and one person in the lift. And I'm just used to that now because I've been going in for out. But there was none of that to start with. And because of that, the 5 Live show was coming from home for a while. Now, obviously, all the right precautions and protocols are in place. So we're able to go in and do the show. But that building, the BBC building on Portland Place, that I think at capacity is about 6,500 people, and there's no one there. There's a few people in the newsroom, and then it's literally, for example, my show, me and Chris, and a producer behind the glass. But even Chris was at home for the first lockdown the whole way through. So yeah, and I've been going in throughout, and I do feel quite lucky to be able to do that because I have a routine, which I know that most people haven't had for such a long time now.
What was it like for the first few days? I think everyone everywhere will have, you know, they'll be telling, you know, their families for generations to come. It's like, oh, on the day that it all kicked off. But for someone like the BBC, which is, you know, is something that just cannot ever stop, no matter what, the BBC will keep on going. Mm. It is the epitome of keep calm and carry on.
Yeah.
And for something like radio, as intrinsic as it is to be in the studio, in the mix, with the desk, with everything there around you, all the support infrastructure that you guys need to get your show on the air, all of a sudden, the rule book just had to get ripped up by everybody. What was it like in...
You know, early days when nobody even really knew... we knew how you got it, but it wasn't clear to start with. If you remember, it was like, oh, yeah, if I touch this, will I get it? Or is it airborne or what is it? So that's actually quite hard to make plans for in a workspace if you don't really know what you're fully dealing with, which they didn't. And I mean, I don't think it's out of place to say that in the early stages, there was even talk that, you know, that we may have to all go to one network just to reduce the amount of shows.
As in kind of like Radio 1 and One Extra, all
everything.
Just kind of
everything. Yeah, I think that's, yeah. I mean, it never happened. It never got to that. But
I mean, that's proper like wartime kind of like, right, we're in a bunker.
Right.
Greg's got to go on. Then
so, but imagine like even more extreme than that. Part of me think, oh, that will never happen because you just don't think of, like, because it's never happened in our lifetime. But
yeah,
there were, you know, it was entirely possible at one point that it would just be the radio, the network, BBC, national radio would be one service and would,
wow.
Yeah, and would be, you know, Radio 4 doing the news.
Oh my God, imagine being the PD for that.
Yeah, or exactly. I doubt I would have got the call to be on. But
I wonder who would have got breakfast. Yeah.
I seem to remember talk about, you know, like merging Radio 1 and 2 for a time. This is stuff that you wouldn't even ever dream of, even being an option, you know?
If you'd have said to Boris, you know, you're basically going to pay the vast majority of the nation just to stay at home.
Yeah.
Preposterous. The same as like going to someone like Alid and saying, Alid, by the way, what's going to happen in a couple of weeks are Radio 1, Radio 2, Radio 4, Radio 3, 6 Music and 1 Extra are all going to condense and into one station. It'd be like, don't be absolutely, that's ridiculous.
I believe that those conversations as an absolute last resort were happening, and I think that's fine to say because nobody knew what we were dealing with, and also at the early stages it was like we need to have less people in this building as we possibly can. So actually what did happen was that the shows became longer. They wanted to give some people to have a bit of space and get their head around it, because when you're on the radio at this time and this mad thing is happening where you don't know what's going to happen next. You remember how terrifying it was? You need a bit, if you're on air every day, you actually need a bit of time yourself, like everyone else has, to process that. They took a show out. So normally you would have Greg, Clara, me, and then Grimmy in the daytime. So me and Clara kind of flip-flop for a while. So it would be Greg, and then, so that would be a four-hour show. Then the next show would be 4 hours. So it would either be me or Clara. And then Grimmy would be 4 hours. And that happened for a few months. Greg's took some time off. Then I filled in for Greg for a week or so when he had his time off, and for Grimmy as well. So, I mean, yeah, the schedule did change very much. We will never see it like that again. I remember just standing outside the BBC, you know, front on Regent Street and thinking, I can't see one person. And this is I think that was like a Friday afternoon, and minimal people in the building. But I have to say, I think that they dealt with it amazingly well, just to keep everything on air. Because I think the BBC has this thing of like, if something falls off air, you just can't have that. So it makes sense for somebody to always be there.
And also, I guess specifically from a Radio 1 point of view, a lot of people look to Radio 1 as its peer, as its, you know, for its,
yeah,
for advice to comfort them, to kind of allay any fears, you know, and that's what Radio 1 does really well.
Yeah, I think that's part of its success. Radio 2 does this. I mean, lots of radio stations provide, you know, company through the
Radio
day.
Radio 1's audience are probably slightly more, they're younger for a start,
yes,
and slightly more worried, you know.
Yeah, I'm not going to say their names, but I'll paraphrase, but I actually have got some here just to give you a bit of an idea of what people are saying.
Yeah, no, that's really,
because I can tell you and say like, oh, people, it's been really you know, it's been vital to people in the pandemic, and I could say it all I want. Yeah. But like, it's I just think it'll give you a couple of examples of the kind of the message that we get on the daily and the headspace that people have been in.
Well, let's segue neatly into that. How do you think radio has changed much over the past 12 months? Presumably interaction's kind of gone through the roof a bit now. And how people are using Radio 1?
Definitely through the first time we were all told to stay at home. And it's just a small tweak that maybe people wouldn't notice, but the music was made warmer and friendlier. And
I love stuff like that. It's like you never perceptibly notice it. You remember, like, Massive Attack changed their name during the Iraq War, just to Massive.
Yeah.
It's just like no one knows, but it's
little
just
tiny things.
Yeah.
And I think your average person wouldn't have noticed, but yeah, I think when it's a really unsure time, I think you surround yourself with familiarity and comfort. So actually the playlist was made warmer and actually more upbeat, and I really noticed it on air, but that's because I knew. How else did it change? I mean, in terms of like, I've been there a long time, and the Radio 1 evolves because it does keep up with what young people think and what they like. But I have to say to you, part of the reason of the reason I love working there so much is the people.
Yeah.
Like, it is a family, and that's such a rubbish cliche, and I'm sorry for using it, but we all really do get on.
That comes across. It's kind of like there's no begrudging Grimmy appearing on your show or you having to phone into Greg. You know, there's it's not done through gritted teeth, because
I certainly hear different stories about Radio 1 in the 80s, but we won't go there for now.
Yeah.
But no, we really are a team, and not just the on-air staff, but you know, the people who make the shows. It's such a lovely, lovely place to be, especially now, and obviously that just isn't happening. So I tell you what I liken it to. It's a bit like if you've ever worked at a radio station and you've had to go in and do a show on Christmas Day.
Oh,
it's like
Christ.
That every day. Oh, or overnights.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've done both, where it's like, cool, I'm the only person here. Or, you know, and for a while, when Chris was at home in the first lockdown, it was literally just me and a producer from behind the glass.
Yeah.
And they weren't even allowed to come in or anything. And they're still not now. But it was just me and another person. I'm just not used to that. And I'm used to coming in and the vibe being like Radio
Tactile
1 vibe, and everyone's
very,
like bouncing ideas, and that's gone. So the last 12 months haven't actually really been it's not been like working at Radio 1. It's just not. I think we've done a good job of keeping it together on air. At the heart of it, like, the relationship with the listeners is still strong, and the relationship I have with Chris obviously hasn't changed. So I wouldn't say that we're faking it. It's just different, and it's not obviously.
You have to amplify it, I guess.
Bit. You do, and obviously this is not the way anyone really wants to work, but that's the way it is. You know, from doing a daily show, which you've done, you know, sometimes you'll have an idea, and this is a great thing about radio. Like on TV, you'll have an idea and it'll be on 5 years later. On radio, you can be like, oh yeah, that sparked something else and blah, blah, blah. All that's kind of gone, because normally you'd have me and Chris, and you'd have a producer, and you'd have an assistant producer. Now, most people are at home. So that spontaneous idea that you have isn't spontaneous anymore, because someone at home will be like, yeah, cool, I'll get on it. But then you've had to WhatsApp them. You're not seeing them in person. And then their internet's down, or the software for editing is crashed.
It's just not the same, is it?
It's just made everything, like, it's possible, but it's made everything harder. Here's the weird thing. So Alad Hayden-Jones is now the head of Radio 1. He hasn't been in the building. So all the time he's been in that job, being the head of Radio 1.
Flying around in his jet.
Yeah. He's not been
still
there.
Still living off the Moyles money.
Yeah. The first time we saw him was when we did the Comet Relief Lolathon last week, and he was allowed to basically wave from, like, I could only just see him distance. And that's the first time he'd been at the radio station, I think, for almost a year. But you're in charge of the radio station, but you haven't been there. So, yeah, I mean, we'll never have a time like it again.
Aside from COVID, you know, the other thing that has kind of, I guess, come into the foray over the past 12 to 18 months, even though it's been around a lot longer than that, is podcasts and is on-demand audio. How Where's your head at with stuff like that? Because obviously, you know, you've got a successful podcast, which is, correct me if I'm wrong, like a highlights package of the show.
Yeah, it's basically the show without the music, and it still, amazingly, still does really good.
Which is all DJs think is the best kind of show, right?
Yeah, right.
Why are the bloody music getting in the way of my games again?
Yeah. The Scott Mills Daily podcast has actually existed. I looked the other day. I think it's like, do you remember when the first time podcast came out and everyone was like, oh, yeah, that's fun. And then everyone went off the idea. So it's existed since the first time podcasts were a thing, which was like 12 years ago.
And just kept going.
And it's been there ever since. Wow. So now when people go, oh yeah, podcast, you should get one. I've had one for 12 years. But I mean, it is just literally the show cut up. But it still does really well, you know, because, and I think a lot of that is because I used to be on Drive Time and then I moved to 1 till 4, and a lot of people that maybe heard Drive Time can't listen between 1 and 4 because of work, etc. So I think we picked up a lot of people and still do pick up a fair amount of people from that.
Are podcasts and radio happy bedfellows, do you think?
Do you know, I think they are, because the quality varies, as we know, and I actually think the quality, I hope, will continue to grow. I mean, don't get me wrong, there are some fantastic podcasts and there are some really bad ones, and the audio quality is naff and the ideas not all there, and let's not get it twisted either, like we're in our little London bubble where like everyone's listening to podcasts. I still think it's about 17%, so it's not it's not huge, but it's going up. Like, it's audio, right? And that's what I love. So I think podcasts will actually have made people listen to audio that maybe never listened to the radio, and like audio is what we do, and I think it will probably cause radio, if anything, to evolve any further. I mean I use podcasts like this. I got a dog recently, all right? Never had a dog before.
I'm contractually obliged by the whole of anybody listening to ask what kind of good boy is it.
It's a little cavapoo called Teddy. He's really cute, apart from when he...
If I could have written what kind of dog and what it would be called and put it in an envelope, I would have said Scott Mills would have had a cavapoo called Teddy.
I'm a dog owner. Never done it before. So I'm like, oh, there must be a podcast for this. So I just search dog podcast. And there's a really good one that comes up called... it's called Dog's Best Friend, I think. And it's a French guy called Ollie. Then you've got Claire Balding, who's got one on Spotify. Now, here's the thing. I could wait around and listen for a dog section on LBC or Five Live, but I'd be waiting a while. So there we go. I can just go straight to that. And actually, on the journey to go and get him, I listened to back-to-back podcasts of that, and I learned a lot. So that by the time I'd met Teddy, I was like, okay, well, they said do this. So that's invaluable. That's how I use podcasts. Yeah. But I do not think anything can replace the way live radio makes you feel, the way it connects with an audience, or the way, you know, it can provide company or uplift you or reassure you or explain, or
it feels very present all the time, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And if I'm honest with you, I've never been more sure about radio's place, and it's kind of amplified through all this, having worked on air, like I said, every day through this. It's I don't know, it, like, listeners feel like, I've been there a long time, so you are part of somebody's day. And now sometimes I sit back and go, well, it's just me, do you know what I mean? But listeners feel that they do know you because it's part of their daily routine if they've chosen your station and your show. And it's weird, I've been doing this so long that I've been warned that the death of radio is coming so many times. I remember, it must have been an Andy Parfit when he was controller meeting. And the vibe of it was, not from him actually, but the whole vibe of the meeting was like, social media is coming and we're going to die. And I think it was Twitter actually, when it was like, that was starting to get a bit like, you remember when Twitter was just a bit of a London thing and it was just that. And we were kind of warned that that would be, you know, the beginning of the end. And then...
But radio's always found a way of soaking up those peripheral kind of things, hasn't it?
Yeah. And then I remember even before that, before I was at Radio 1, it was like in the dot-com thing, and there was like these little internet radio stations popping up everywhere, and everyone was like, well, they're going to kill us, and they didn't. Then it was streaming services of like, well, playlists will kill us all. It hasn't. It's a bit like a few years ago when everyone was panicking that YouTube would replace television. Well, it hasn't.
No.
And I do not think that radio is going dark anytime soon. I really don't.
But I think Radio 1 in particular, there's arguments aside about, youth and the charter and all that kind of stuff. It's always found a way of using social media to benefit the output, YouTube's a great example of where Radio 1's just shone. And utilize that, Instagram's another great one. There's no doubt that the station has probably, formed some of its content to be a bit more snackable and a bit more, to be utilized on social media more, but never really at the mercy of the listener. I don't think.
I actually think a few years back, because of the YouTube thing we just mentioned, I think that I've got to be careful here. I think occasionally we were doing things on air as a radio station first and foremost, where we were worrying about viewers too much.
Right. Yeah.
So I remember doing a couple of things. I would think I was filling in on the chart show, and our tagline was listen, watch, share back then. Right, so this is probably 4, 5, 6 years ago. You are saying, at least you're saying listen first, but then you're saying watch the radio. And this is because of the massive explosion of YouTube and YouTubers. Yeah. And I remember doing a couple of things on the radio and thinking, because radio is always my first thought, you see, because that's just how I've always done it. And it's
You're a radio guy.
Yeah, I'm a radio guy, and to the biggest, most nerdiest point, that most geeky point. And I remember doing a couple of things thinking, this doesn't work on the radio. Mm. It's just too visual. And that shouldn't, it's all, hindsight is a marvelous thing, but that shouldn't be the case.
You're just chasing the tail, tails wagging the dog, isn't it?
It didn't happen too many times. And I remember everything we said, we'd be like, well, that was fun, wasn't it? And the YouTube video's up, and we said it for absolutely everything. Yeah. I remember the chart used to be, the Radio 1 chart show, it was like, listen from 4, watch from 6. And we became obsessed with watch. Now, I think now we have the balance 100% right, because the video content that Radio 1 does is amazing. And it is very snackable, as you said.
Yeah. But it's not like when there was a period, wasn't there, where, breakfast shows were streamed onto Sky or something like that, which was just
all
like
of that.
Mental. Greg's a lovely looking guy and he's very stylish. But, there have been times where breakfast presenters have not looked like Greg James, and you would not want to watch
Absolutely.
Them for 3 hours in the morning.
Well, even going back further than this, I remember, that's really just sparked a memory for me. This is probably 15 years ago, where they did something called Radio 1 on 3. And it was my show for a week on BBC 3. But that's not that interesting, because it's just me talking into a microphone. Now, obviously, we ramped up the visual stuff, the stuff that would be good on the telly as well. But that actually happened where... Because I remember one day coming in and I was like, whoa, these studio lights have got a lot better. And they were like, yeah, we're going to be on BBC 3 all next week. And it was, I think it was like, it was a trial thing because everyone was trying things out. But yeah, it was on after Family Guy. And it was just, It was just literally me going, hello, Radio 1. And it's like, looking back, who was entertained by that? A man talking into a microphone. But yeah, I mean, the thing is, you have to, Radio 1 has, and you have to go with that trend and go with what is now. And at the time, that was now. Telling people to go to YouTube every 5 minutes, that was what we thought we needed to do at the time. And actually, It was. Like, I don't, yeah. I'm not saying that was a bad move. We should never have done that, because that was just the way that the young people were consuming. I think we've totally now got the balance right. The radio is good, first and foremost, and then everything else falls into line because it's a radio station.
This sounds like a good point to break for a Radio Today advert break. We'll be right back in a second.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creators of the Bionics Studio. Listening, watching, reacting to and learning from every spoken word, caller, tweet and SMS to unmix, unlock and understand your content. The Bionics Studio transforms everything about radio except the way you make it.
Now, let me tell you about Clean Feed. Whether it's an OB, interview or co-hosting, Clean Feed is designed for radio and podcasters. And now it's simple to connect live audio over the web. The quality is great and you can record as well. Clean Feed doesn't cost anything to get started, and you can find out more on their website at cleanfeed.net.
Welcome back. This is the Radio Today podcast. I don't know how it's being positioned. This is like a guest episode from me, Jamie East, the host of the Smart 7 podcast, speaking to radio legend, Radio 1 legend, Mr. Scott Mills. Scott, I've got a question for you, and it's one I'm particularly invested in. So whenever I've been on television, whenever I've been stuck on the box, I've always been a sidekick, and gladly so. So I've been a sidekick to some amazing people, to Ryland, Sue Perkins, Emma Willis, Christine Bleakley, all, you know, I've always kind of known my place eventually. Talk to me about the dynamic between you and Chris Starr. Do you class yourselves as a double act? Do you class yourselves as you featuring Chris Stark? How is that addressed? Because, and is it something that you had to address very early on? Because I think you do, otherwise it gets out of control and gets quite uncomfortable.
Here's the thing about that, right? So I always think of it when we're discussing this kind of thing, of those, when you read books or you see stuff about like those big American hosts, or you watch those films, it's like, I want my name in the title first. Yeah. That has never actually come up with me and Chris. I tell you why I think it is. Many reasons, but mostly because it evolved so slowly. Yeah. And so kind of naturally from a point where of genuine friendship. So I guess if I was going into a show with as a double act, and I was like, if I had a big enough ego to see myself as the man with, you know, my name above the doors, you know, I wouldn't be this brash about it, but I'd be like, well, hang on, it's my show. But that has never come up with Chris, because it's just kind of evolved into Scott and Chris. And there's never been a conversation about like, oh yeah, well, it's my name because I'm bigger than him. It just doesn't happen.
That's quite rare.
I think it's very rare, because I do think that that those conversations are had a lot. I think initially it's because neither me or Chris have egos particularly. We actually don't. And then also, if you think about how it happened, you can see why we're at where we're at now, because it's like I said, it's just kind of, it happened so naturally. We weren't put together. I remember when I first met Chris, it was, I'm from Southampton, so I used to DJ a lot at Southampton University. And Chris was at Southampton University when I was, and I was doing a lot of these DJ gigs there. And he was always on before me. He comes off, I go on, do my set, and then you just have a couple of drinks afterwards. I just got to know him quite well because I was playing so many gigs in Southampton at the time. So we just got chatting. I knew that he did a bit of the student radio, and I knew that he loved Radio 1 and he liked my show a lot. And the more I got to know him, the more I just thought, You're a funny guy. And I heard a bit of the stuff he'd done on the radio, and I thought, actually, this is not, I mean, it wasn't amazing, but it was student radio. It was kind of rough around the edges. But I was like, he's definitely got something here. And I just remember like being in the pub with him, like as we became more friends, and thinking, your storytelling is great. And I'll tell you what it was about Chris that I thought, like, he'd be good for Radio 1, because he is, and he won't mind me saying this, you're every man.
Yeah, he's the antithesis of a London media DJ.
Right. So at the time, he was, you know, a young guy from Watford. You know, he's got a chain on. He's listening to Garage and he's driving around the Asda Watford car park kind of vibe.
Anyone didn't
have that person or anyone like it. Your lad, you know, he's a lad, a young lad. And actually, that's loads of our audience. And we didn't really have that. I should say as well, this wasn't like a massive master plan. It's like, I know what we don't have. A lad. Let's get one of those. It was just like, we didn't have it. And I just thought he'd be great. And then he was on the show as just as a caller sometimes, first of all. And then...
he's Barry from Watford, literally.
Yeah, it was a bit like... Well, I would say he was my mate, but he would just call up and it would be something anecdotal that I found funny that happened to him. Like I said, I'd be in the pub with him and be like, right, that's got to go on air because that's funny. And we'd do a phone call.
Yeah.
And then Ben Cooper, the boss at the time, heard it and was like, he's got something, you know. And I was like, I'm glad you agree. And we just trialed Chris out. Like, I think it was maybe even one or two shows a week for ages, actually, for a year or more. I was so impressed how quickly he got really good.
Yeah.
And I think he's a fantastic broadcaster now. I always knew he was good, but I didn't think that he would become this good. I actually did. I'm blown away by him. For example, when we did this Comic Relief Lolathon last week, we've worked together so long now.
Half a million quid. Let's just give a shout out to half a million quid.
Oh, well, I did all right. So. Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, well done.
But for example, I can do all the nuts and bolts and I'm going like, right, it's the Lolathon, it's Comic Relief, it's Radio 1. And because it's a bit like being a married couple, we know each other so well that he can just tell that, like, okay, he has just given out the text number, but he is too tired now to actually explain why we need the money. And he will just pick it up and he'll be like, it's so hard at the moment to ask you for money, but we're doing it because of this and this and this. And he will deliver exactly what I want to say, but my brain couldn't think of it at the time. So, and it's like he reads you. I don't even need to go like, help me out. He will just do it. It's the kind of equivalent of when you finish each other's sentences when you are a couple or whatever. It's that. And I love being on air with him. I do. And partly it's because he's one of my best mates. But I can tell when a duo on the radio has just been put together. Sometimes they work amazingly well because they got lucky. Sometimes, and that is luck.
Yeah.
More often than not, it can be... stilted or, you know, and at its worst can be terrible and uncomfortable to listen to.
Do you know what I think it is? And I think it's the same for TV as well, Scott. It's because when people are put together in those situations, it is not implicitly explained to them what the dynamic is intended to be.
No, it never is.
Because either commissioners or PDs or, you know, execs or whoever has kind of decided to put these two people together has not like put them both in a room, and it would solve all of these problems. Put both rooms, said, right, it's your show, you're the sidekick, either deal with it or it stops now, because that's the dynamic we've chosen, because they're a better anchor and you're better at doing the whimsical funnies. That's just how it's got to work. Do you want to do this or not? You know, you both go, yeah, I get it now, I understand. Because what happens is, and this has happened to me several times, and it's of no kind of like detriment to anyone that I've worked with, because it's always sold to you as a co-host. Always sold to you as a co-host. So you turn up for work and it's like, great, I'm looking forward to this co-host. And then you get the script or you get the running order and you go, yeah, this doesn't look much like a co. And then you get on the phone to your agent or you get on the phone to your wife or your boyfriend or whatever. And you go, fucking hell, it's happened again.
I'm hardly in it.
Exactly. And it sounds awful to say that out loud, but that is purely because, and it's not an ego thing. It's because you've been sold the wrong thing.
Yeah, I understand. That's the thing, you see, like, because it's been so, because it comes from genuine friendship and it's never, we weren't put together. We were like, oh, that'd be a nice idea. Let's try him out. And then it was so slow. And as you know, and it's happened to me as well, these things generally aren't, especially in television. It's like, right, you're doing it with blah and off you go. And I mean, I've been in situations where I've never met that person before, and then you're on the air with them, and actually you're right, you don't know necessarily what
they've been told,
what your role is. Yeah, and you're right, it is, I've never thought of it like this, because I don't, this is not what happened with Chris, but it is always, and you'll be co-hosting with, and often you go, oh, I felt like a co-host to me.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Why am I in the booth and they're in the floor? You know, I don't get, I'm reading off the iPad here. Yeah.
Why are they on screen and I'm not? I mean, it's exactly. Happened to us all.
Why am I writing jokes for them? And I guess this leads into something I wanted to kind of ask you about, really, is because I was listening this afternoon to the show, and something that I think most people who've spent any time with you guys on the radio is that you've developed, and it's usually the kiss of death for a show, is that your show is peppered with in-jokes and almost a language that is only really explained, but if you just keep listening to the show. And that's usually the thing that you're told not to do on the radio. It's like never do in-jokes, never, you know, you've got to reach about as broad amount of people. But, you know, you're relax those kind of things. The things where, to an outside listener, it's like, what the
What's
hell
going
was
on? Yeah, I actually, not all of it, but some of it is actually stuff that you're actually, like, if there was a school of radio, you're absolutely told not to do.
Yeah.
I'm aware of this.
But I'm just wondering why you think it works for you, because it does work.
Yeah, I think I do. I think it's that thing. I always remember, this is probably pre-internet, where I'd go on holiday to America when I was like 18. I'm like, oh, I'm gonna listen to all the radio all the time and see what they're saying and who. So exciting.
Famously, apparently, what Steve Wright does, isn't it? Have you heard that story? He goes to a hotel and just locks it. He doesn't need to. Steve, you can do it from home now.
Yeah. I know, but I think he just quite likes going to America.
Yeah.
I remember going there maybe for the first time, and I was like, oh, I'm gonna listen to Howard Stern. And I mean, I certainly don't model myself on Howard Stern, but this is kind of like what you're talking about. And I listened to it and I was like, I have no idea what's going on here.
Yeah.
But I kind of like it, and I like the feel of it. And I get that he's really good, but I'm going to have to listen to this more to get it. And so I did. And it's a very easy one to forget. Like, you know, if you're getting new listeners in, you need to keep re-explaining. And actually, sometimes I'm not very good at that, because I'm so used to the listeners, like, being there and chipping in. And here's the thing, like, even though I've been on Radio 1 for 8 million years and on other radio for 8 million years before that, I'm always learning. I truly am. And I listen back to a lot of it. I listen back to the chart that I do on Fridays a lot and go, oh, that could have been tighter. Oh, you could have done that better, blah, blah, blah. I'm super critical. And, but yeah, I think the show at the time it's at right now is, it feels like a bit of a club, you know, it's kind of a lunchtime club, and it's a big club, but I think if you get the jokes, then that's great. If you don't, then hopefully you'll like the vibe of it and just kind of stick around.
You just want to hang out with the funny kids, yeah.
I actually think it's a very warm show now. And when I joined Radio 1, I have to say to you, I mean, it was the 90s, and if you remember, like, TV in the 90s was actually quite horrible. Everyone was just like...
Yeah.
I remember going on, when I first started Radio 1, I remember going on, like, Nevermind the Buzzcocks, Mistake. And it was just like, oh, my God, this is awful. Why are you being so horrible? I think everything was a bit less warm then. And I've got to tell you, because I thought that I had to, I was super bitchy on the air then. I was a bit of a queen. I was a bit of like,
but the whole world was like that then. You know, the internet born, you know, anonymity on the internet was a very powerful and dangerous thing. You know, Holy Moly, for instance, you know, Pop Bitch, all of those, all of those kind of things. And I remember, God, I've just had a massive rush. I think me and you had a tiny falling out online before we'd even met.
How exciting.
I think you nicked a Holy Moly
idea.
That's
the 90s for you. Do
you remember there was a picture of a woman who worked for a council or something who had these amazing black-rimmed thick glasses?
Right, yes. And I know her name, Eileen Kinnear.
Yes.
And I Harrow think it was, Council.
Yeah, and it was like...
Now I'm having the massive wave of flashback
and I just
as well.
Remember because like Holy Moly went quite big on it, going, oh my
God,
look at this.
And you're like, he's nicking our ideas.
And I listened to your show and I was like, hang on a minute, because didn't you do... Because you'd like, then I was more pissed off that you'd done it properly, and didn't you do cut out glasses for everybody or something?
Yeah, we did all that. But we, believe me, Jamie, we saw that on Holy Moly. We took that idea and we ran with it.
But
probably should have given you a credit, but it was the 90s.
Exactly, the snarkiness was a really weird time to be in the media.
I think so. And actually, I think that what I was doing, I'm a nice person, honest, but I think what I was doing, because I was new and I was still actually finding my on-air thing, was my go-to was like, oh, just be a bit nasty and be a bit of a bitch. Yeah. And
Because
it is easier. But, and I'll say this as well, like I did commercial radio before Radio 1. So I'm from Southampton. So I did Power FM in Southampton. Then I went up to GWR in Bristol to work there. Then I worked in Piccadilly in Manchester for 2 years. So it was like 2 years, 2 years, 2 years. And then I came to London to work on the launch of Heart. So I'd done a lot of commercial radio before Radio 1, okay? Because I have been doing it since I was like 16.
Yeah.
And I have to say, not now, because I think there are some fantastic people with personality on commercial radio. Back then, personality was not required.
No.
If you find like a recording of me in the mid-90s on Piccadilly in Manchester or Heart, it's all good. I'm telling you the time, I'm telling you the weather, I'm telling you the music. And it's all
Crash
sounds
and
really
roll.
Yeah, it sounds all really bright and really tight and really jolly. Is there anything of me in that broadcast? Mm. Not a bit. Because it wasn't required. It was all really fast paced. If you listen to Capital from back then, like I think that at that point Radio 1 was really the only place where people on the radio in music radio had personality, and Radio 2 a bit, but it was radio, commercial radio then was like Key 103 Manchester, the most music, that was Simply Red, here's blah blah blah, and don't forget our Action line's still open and blah blah blah, and the weather 24 degrees in blah blah blah, and you're listening to Scott Mills song. I could do that really well. When I went to Radio 1, they were like, they literally were like, cool. And they got the producer, which I'd never had before, by the way. I never had a producer outside of, it just didn't happen, doesn't happen. They literally produced a blank sheet of paper and went, right, so what should we do in the show? And I was like, what do you mean?
What do you
mean? Because I was used to doing such tight formats.
What had Radio 1 spotted in you? How had you made that leap? How did that kind of leap of faith? Let's be honest, there are going to be a lot of people listening who are commercial DJs who are having that problem. You know, I had it at Virgin, and that's, you know, no problem there. I just was not a fit for commercial radio whatsoever. But there will be a lot of people that have got ambitions to do the kind of stuff that you're doing, but can't find a way out.
I agree. And I'll say this now. I actually think there are some, and it's a shame because a lot of these guys, because of networking, et cetera, have no or a lot less work now. And I think there are some great, more than I ever remember growing up, some great talent in smaller stations, local stations. There seems to be, it's a bit like I always say, like, do you remember when you first started watching Pop Idol or X Factor and you were so amazed that when someone could sing well, you're like, oh my God, they're brilliant. And now everyone can sing.
Yeah.
That's probably because of YouTube and the internet.
Yeah.
But now when someone like, do you remember when you'd see like, I don't know, Kelly Clarkson or Leona Lewis back in the day and you'd be like, oh my God.
Now they were amazing. Discovered? Yeah.
Yeah. That. I feel that about radio now. I'm like, there are more good people and more good broadcasters, I think, than there have ever been. I think the standard from when I was growing up and actually getting into the industry is so much higher now. And it's a bit like, you know, it's like everyone can sing. I'm not saying everyone can be a DJ, but there's definitely a lot more people who are a lot better at it than there was, thank God, when I was getting into it. If I'm honest, I was just so pleased that I was on the radio anywhere. I just, it was what it, I wanted to do it since I can remember. Since I was like 8 years old, I remember 7, 8 years old. My poor mama was like there in my bedroom, like pretending to be on Radio 1 when I was 8, and she was my only listener, making my tea.
How did it go? Did they approach you? Well, did you approach them? Did you send them demos?
So I never thought when I got into radio, even as I was moving up through it, I never thought that Radio 1 would even be an option. It didn't cross my mind, because to me, it was the equivalent of becoming the president. It's just one of those things that doesn't happen to you. And even as I got, you know, to, because actually, if you think about the cities I moved between, they did get bigger, like Southampton, Bristol, Manchester, London, you know, it was all going upwards like that. And then the natural thing for maybe you could think was like, oh, well, I'll give Radio 1 a crack. I don't know why, but it never really occurred to me that that would even be an option. And then I met a guy at the Sony Radio Awards, a guy who actually sadly died a couple of weeks ago, called Simon Willis.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And I remember him coming up to me at the Sonys, and I was on Heart at the time in London when I just joined for the launch of Heart. And he was like, you should send some stuff to Radio 1. You should send it to me. And I said this on Instagram the other night. He was really my way into Radio 1. I've got a lot to thank him for. And he was part of the whole, when Zoe Ball took over the breakfast show for the first time on Radio 1, I started on the same day as Zoe on Radio 1.
Wow.
I know. So he was kind of responsible for that. He looked over, he was overseeing that show and my show. So yeah, I have a lot to thank him for. And when he died, me and Zoe were chatting and just kind of reminiscing about Simon and how brilliant he was, and about the old days, like, you know, basically our first days at work there. And I think what they were looking for, if I'm honest, was they were looking for somebody to do early breakfast, nothing more than that. They were looking for a young DJ who could actually do a good turn, is what I always say.
Could be energetic at that time in the morning.
I was very good at being really tight, talking up to the vocal, telling you what the songs were, telling you a bit of info about the song. Did I have much more than that at that point? No. But I think, as there always is and always should be at Radio 1, I think there was a thing of like, look, we need to get some newer, younger voices on here. And I was very lucky to be one of those. However, I remember Simon saying that to me, oh, you should send some stuff in. I was like, okay, cool, I will. So I did. This continued for 3 years with them going, nah. And me going, okay, I'll send. And they were like, send us some more. And I was like, okay, cool. And then
see, I'd have just
nothing.
Gone, oh, fuck it.
Right. So this sounds ridiculous and it sounds made up, but I remember getting an email and they were like, oh, send us some more. And part of me was going, do you know what? This has been 3 years now. I'm pretty happy with what I'm doing. I'm earning good money. I'm living in London.
Taking the piss.
Yeah. It was a bit like, and I was like, okay, I'll send another one. But in my head, I was saying to myself, look, you've got to give this up, because it was a lovely idea. And thank you to Simon for suggesting it. Well, he then ended up being my exec. But he actually put it in my head in the first place. Before that, I hadn't even thought about applying for Radio 1. Wow. But then once I started, I was like, oh, well, he said that maybe I should. I mean, I wasn't pestering them, but I was genuinely like, you know, sending them and they go, it's not what we're looking for. Or then you'd send another one. They're like, yeah, we liked that bit. We didn't like that bit.
At least you were getting some good feedback.
Exactly. No, I got, but I was honestly about to resign myself to the thing of like, this is not going to happen. And then I sent in one more demo and I cannot remember or what it was. And maybe it was something that I don't, you know, maybe it was that thing that they were looking for that I have no. Maybe they heard something there that they didn't hear in the others. But they were like, you should come in and do a demo. And I was like, oh, here we go. Here we are. Right. I'm going in the building, guys. Yeah. This must mean something. And there was a guy called Fergus Dudley, who is pretty high up now at BBC. And he was my producer for the day. And I remember going in there on a Sunday afternoon in the old building in Yording House on just off Great Portland Street. And I remember seeing Mark Goodyear in the studio next door doing the chart. And I was like, oh, shit, this is such a Radio 1. And this often happens with me. But they gave me some songs and they gave me some notes. And Jamie, my nerves totally got the better of me.
Yeah.
The whole thing I found so overwhelming. The fact that I was there and I knew that I could do better than I did that day. You know that horrible feeling when you like...
You feel like you've let yourself down a bit.
Like, I've really fucked this, actually. I really have. And I remember finishing and going to Fergus and going, who I'd only met that day, and he was like, I think you could do better than that, do you? And I was like, yeah. And he was like, and I thought I'd blown it. I actually did. And then he was like, look, just come in and do it again next week and let's just erase this one. And I was like, okay, let's do it. Brilliant. And then I went in the next week, did another, I mean, can you tell how long this took?
Yeah.
Did another one. It was better. I mean, this could have been, again, 6 months later. I got an email going, hi, can you come and see Lorna Clark, who is now the head of BBC, is the head of pop at the BBC. At that point was editor for Radio 1. I remember she took me out. I met her in Soho at this private members bar. And I was like, oh, hello. And I was like, well, why does she want to meet me? Because, like, literally... Yeah. I've had so many rejections. Is it just to tell me to my face that I'm crap? And then they offer me early breakfast.
Oh,
and I have never
what a great
had
feeling.
A feeling like that. I mean, yeah, but anyway, in summary, it took a while. So if you are listening and thinking like, wow, like, I mean, no one tried harder than me.
Yeah,
I hope that that gives
some
solace and hope to people. I mean, I've certainly seen in my time at Radio 1, people just get on there and I'm like, okay, I mean, you've been on T4 once, yeah, but
exactly.
you've just literally got the job that I tried 5 years to get. No shade. But it definitely was slower.
And how many years has it been now?
This will be 21 years.
Where's your head at now? You know, Where are you in your mind? You know, because it doesn't sound like the show's suffering from fatigue, from, you know, from anything. It sounds fresh. It sounds lively. It sounds energetic. Where's your head at?
Someone, I don't want to name them, but someone that I really respect in the industry, who is a presenter, is still a presenter, was like, and was on Radio 1, is like, when it's time, you will just know.
Yeah.
Like, because either you don't understand the trends of now or you can't be arsed with them.
Yeah.
One of the two. It's like, and I've got, like, to be honest, like, most of it, I feel, and I think this is part of the reason I've been there so long. I think there's a few reasons. One, because I don't ever cause a fuss. I keep my head down and try and do a good job.
Yeah.
Tick.
Always very
two,
important.
Yeah. I think it is. Like, don't become a problem for those guys, you know? It's just like, get it done and get it done well. Two, I'm super critical. I am a bit of an old school believer you're only as good as your last show a bit. And I've got that motivation. I don't ever want to do a crap show ever. And when I do have a crap show, which everyone will if you're on every day, I get a bit fed up. So there's that. That's good as well.
Yeah.
And then it's just, if you can still represent what young people like and what they want and what they need and what they are into, then I think you're good. I think there's a thing with Radio 1, not so much now, but a while back, it's like, well, they're approaching 30, they need to be off the air. And it's like, yeah, you do need young people on Radio 1. But I always remember David Lloyd saying this, legend. He was like, if a plumber comes round to fix my sink, kind of want them to have fixed some sinks before.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Youth doesn't necessarily mean, it does sometimes, it doesn't necessarily mean that that's what young people want to hear, because some of it won't be very good. No one watches Saturday Night Takeaway and goes, oh, Anson Dekker in their mid-40s. They just don't. And kids love it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's not that. It's about, is this entertaining to a wide range of people? A lot of them very young. Does a 6-year-old or an 8-year-old watch Anson Deck like doing a funny prank and go, that's funny? Yes. Does a 16-year-old watch it and go, that's funny? Yes, it's Anson Deck, that's funny. 20, 25, 30, 35, it works.
Yeah.
And however, there is some stuff that comes along, and I'm not fully like, I'm not on TikTok. I'm just not.
No, same.
The
fork in the road appeared with Snapchat for me. I was just like, I don't know where the buttons are. I literally can't, I don't know where the bloody button is to start this thing.
But I think as long as you're not sounding really out of touch, and as long as you're turning out an entertaining show, which can be entertaining and is entertaining with a young audience, I think you're good. I've got to be honest with you. I know that there are many people that have like a career plan. Now, I've been quite lucky for the last 21 years. I've not had to do one.
Yours has been brilliant.
Yeah, it's been all right. But I'm not, I really do go with the flow. I'm not one of those people that's like, wow, if I'm not on Radio 2 within 2 years, then I'm a failure. Yeah. I just don't work like that. It's a bit like I was saying earlier about the ego thing. I don't really possess one of any sort. So I just feel lucky to, like I said, especially recently, to actually be working like 6 days a week.
Yeah,
like the Five Live thing. I love that so much. I remember they came to me 2 years ago and they were like, do you want to do speech radio? And I was like, you're joking me. I can never talk for 2 hours.
It's terrifying. Speech radio is terrible. When all you do is music and then someone says speech. I remember moving from Virgin to talk radio.
Terrifying.
Just absolutely shit in my pants.
I remember it was John O'Wall at the time who was controller of Five Live, and we went for a drink, and he was like, oh, I'd quite like you to do a weekend show. And I was like, what do you mean? It's Five Live, it's sport and news. And he was like, yeah, but I want it to be have elements of that, but I want it to be a Saturday morning show, which is an entertainment show for Five Live. And I was like, yeah, but I'm a music radio DJ. Like, I don't... Like, those songs are my crutch. I need that. Yeah. And he was like, you don't. Yeah. And he actually mentioned Simon Mayo to me, who was on Radio 1 and 2 for years, and then actually did a 5-year stint on Five Live every afternoon, which a lot of people forget, but he did that. And he said to me, like, Simon was a music radio jock like you, and then did Five Live and was amazing at it. And I tell you what, I've loved about doing that for the last over a year now. Even now, I got to do something that I never ever thought that I would be able to do.
Yeah.
Because now having no songs doesn't terrify me anymore. And I remember that first show only a year ago where I was literally rocking back and forth, sweating everywhere you can sweat, going, oh my God, I don't know, I can't do this.
I think we texted each other that weekend. Yeah.
And going back to the demo, you know, where I said where I really messed it up at Radio 1, doing that only on live, on Five Live.
Wow.
I my nerves once again got the better of me. But now I absolutely love it. I love it.
I love it. It's one of those, it's like jumping off the high diving board in a swimming pool. It's just terrifying.
It's just
terrifying to stand
over
there.
It takes a different level of confidence. Yeah. You know, if you told me 5 years ago, oh yeah, you're going to be on Five Live, I'd be like, you get out. Do you know what I mean? And I'm so glad for that opportunity as well.
Circling back to where we were at the beginning, talking about, you know, the impact that you've had as a broadcaster and the relationship that you got with the listeners. Share with us some of those messages that you got sent in around about the time of COVID.
Okay, so I just picked a couple of these out today because I knew we were chatting. Hey, Scott. Hey, Chris. I've just donated to your Lolathon. I'm 23 and I've grown up listening to you. The last couple of years have been quite difficult, but throughout lockdown, I've had the podcast playing every night on my daily walk along the beach. I really can't stress enough how important you guys have been to me in keeping my head above water. Much love. I'll be listening all the way through. Do you know what I mean? It's that thing of like, you're part of their day and you should never take that for granted. This is another one. I doubt you'll get a chance to read this, but just wanted to say thank you for always being there, helping to raise a smile in the good times and the bad. Like so many of your listeners, you've been the soundtrack to my day for many years, and this has always been a comfort, particularly over the past year, which has been especially difficult for me, as I know it has many others. I haven't been able to listen to as much of the Lolathon as I would have liked, but I've donated because I wanted to show my support and to say thanks for everything. I know you get told this a lot, but you really make a difference to people's lives. Keep up the great work.
That pretty much sums up everything that you need to say, I think, doesn't it? That's great. That must feel so good, yeah, to hear that.
I think that says it better than I ever could, you know.
Scott, thank you so much for this. Really, really enjoyed it. It's been fantastic. And obviously anyone listening to this podcast won't need to know that Scott is on Radio 1 weekdays and Five Live on a Saturday. And congrats on the Lolathon. It's a whole load of money raised for such a great cause. Scott Mills, thank you. I've been Jamie East, and you can catch me on the Smart 7 podcast every weekday at 7 a.m.
Thank you. I really enjoyed it.
Ladies and gentlemen, Scott Mills and Jamie East. Thank you, guys. Checks in the post. Okay, that's it for this week. Thank you very much for following again, and we'll speak to you again same time next week. We'll be on time next week because the interview is already in the can, believe it or not, but we'll tell you more next Wednesday. Thanks for listening. Take care.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics.
Original music for this podcast was composed by Mikasa.